Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast. I'm really excited that you decided to join us, whether you be in your car, on your run, or listening onto the computer. On today's show, we're going to be talking about how to integrate yoga into your training. And as our expert guest, we have on with us today, Sage Rowntree. For those of you who don't know, Sage is an internationally renowned yoga teacher and a writer for athletes and runners. Her students range from casual runners to Olympians, and she's written for Runner's World, Endurance Magazine, and USA Triathlon. She also has a few books that we'll bring up in the interview. Sage today is going to talk about the different types of yoga and how you can implement each into your training for the best results. She's also going to talk about how yoga needs to complement your running schedule and progress just like a strength training plan would as you get closer to your race. We're also going to discuss some specific yoga poses and styles that can help complement your weaknesses, from increasing hip flexibility to increasing power and strength. And Sage is also going to share with us her three favorite routines for runners, especially for those who are short on time and only have 10 to 15 minutes for yoga. Before we get started with the show, I just want to make a couple quick notes. The first is, if you want to access any of the resources from this podcast, you can visit the resource page at runnersconnect.net/RC13. If you have any questions, please feel free to post them in the comment section of that post, and either Sage or myself will definitely try to get back to you as soon as possible. And for those of you listening, if you ever want to ask your own questions to our guest, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/onlinerunningcoach or Twitter. Our handle is @runners_connect. And if you follow us there, we'll post when our interviews are scheduled with our next guest, and you can have your opportunity to ask them any questions that you've had. And finally, if you enjoy this podcast, please take time to vote for it on iTunes and give us a better rating. It helps increase our exposure and actually helps give us access to better and bigger guests. So with all that said, let's go ahead and get started on our show today. Thank you, Sage, for taking the time out of your day to chat with us.
I'm delighted to be here, Jeff.
Awesome. So let's get started and talk a little bit about yourself and kind of your background in training, or I should say running and sport and fitness in general, and how yoga kind of came into your life.
Right. Like many people, I found yoga really kind of mystical and intimidating. And in the first class I went to, I had a really negative experience and wound up hating it.
Wow.
In part because it was really hard. It was much harder than it looked like it was going to be from the other side of the glass at the gym. And we held the poses for a long time. I was shaking. There was Sanskrit. It was just very intimidating. And I walked out of the room thinking, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. But then I told myself, well, if you have that strong a reaction to something, maybe you need to investigate it a little bit more. So I went back the next week, and the next week there was a sub for the class. And the sub had us touch each other. And I was totally turned off by the concept of partner yoga and having to touch somebody's feet who I didn't know. It was really gross. So I said, that's it. I'm not going anymore. And a year or two went by, and I was pregnant with my older daughter. And I went to prenatal yoga, which is really happy experience because everybody is in the same boat. They're pregnant. They're looser because of the hormones. It's a really nice community feeling. Mm-hmm. In fact, the teacher for prenatal yoga was the sub who had us touch each other's feet.
Okay.
Except in prenatal yoga, that's wonderful because somebody's touching your feet. So it was a shift for me. I was just in a different space in my life. So I was ready to be open to the practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then when my daughter was about one, I was training for a marathon and thought, oh, things are hurting. I felt really good when I was in yoga. So I went back to yoga, and that's the time that it really stuck. So it came to me concurrently training for the marathon, and I knew that it was going to be helpful. I don't think I realized exactly how helpful it was going to be mentally during the race. I knew it was going to be physically helpful because it was making my body feel better, but it gave me some really useful coping tools and awareness tools and breathing tools that I deployed to good effect in that race.
Yeah, no, that's amazing that you came from really kind of hating it the first couple of times. And I'll share with you, the first time I did yoga was a very similar experience. I had gone out on a pretty hard long run, and then I went to the health club and was like, yoga is very, I was like, oh, this is very easy. It's very stretchy. I'm a pretty good athlete. And I went in, and it was absolutely killer. And I was kind of like, wow, I'm not doing this again. And it was kind of like hard for me to get started again. So it's funny that you had that experience. And I'm sure so many of the listeners of this podcast are probably had the same experience and are kind of like, how does this actually fit in? So I'm glad that that you can share their, you know, exactly how they were feeling like that.
Right. And there are a lot of barriers to getting an athlete into class. And not only is it like, oh, it's going to be, it turns out to be too hard, or conversely, it turns out to feel like it's too easy and mm-hmm. then it feels boring. I think that that's really more about the athlete than about the practice. But, you know, yeah, it takes work to take an easier gentle yoga class and stay present. And that's actually quite hard. But then, like you said, we wonder how it's supposed to fit with our training.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big question. And
yeah.
the more serious you are about your running, the more serious you ought to be about finding a practice of yoga that complements it instead of just wearing you down more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's talk about a little bit about that now. You know, I think probably the best place to start, and tell me if I'm wrong, is kind of the different applications of yoga. You said there's different practices. Is that the best place to start in terms of trying to figure out what would work best for you in your training?
Absolutely, and it's tough since across North America, we use a lot of different terms to mean different style.
Okay.
So let me first issue the caveat that folks just need to go and try these out for themselves. Ultimately, it's a question of trial and error.
Okay.
I put it sometimes, I use an analogy that finding the right class for you is kind of like finding the right running shoe. And some of us are going to need a more supportive shoe, and we want a style that's really alignment specific, that's going to have a lot of hands-on adjustments, a lot of explicit instructions in class. And then others are going to do fine in a minimalist shoe, and mm-hmm. they just want to go to a class where the teacher is calling out the poses, or the pace is different, or the length of the class is a little bit shorter, or there's more or less spirituality. I mean, there's a whole range, just like there's a whole range of shoes.
Right.
And even within a certain brand, the various models can be different. So you could find a style of yoga that works for you, but you need to also find the right teacher for you. And then you combine all of that with your personal schedule and your training, it gets kind of complicated.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. So a principle that I use for folks is, well, first off, if they're new to yoga, it would be great to get them in a beginner's class, something that's called Yoga 101 or Intro to Yoga or Yoga for Complete Beginners.
Mm-hmm.
Know, though, that if you go to a beginner class at like a gentle kind of studio, that's going to be very different from whether you went to a beginner class at a hot yoga studio, which
okay.
is going to be more physically rigorous. Still, an introduction is a really nice way in. The off-season is also a good time to be doing this sampling because you don't want to add something really new as you get closer to your peak events. So now is the right time of year here in North America to go and check out these various styles and approaches. If you're looking to build strength, there are two ways. One is to go to a class called Power Yoga, and the other is to go to an alignment class that's going to have longer holds of the poses, and it can be surprisingly strength building and tough. And that's what I found in my first class. Like I said, we were going into the poses, and then I felt like the teacher forgot that we were there. He didn't. He was doing it on purpose, but it was really tough to hold poses for a long time, and that's
yeah.
not something that we're used to doing in running, since we're always cycling through the stride cycle.
Right.
So power yoga for strength, or longer holds of standing poses for strength. And then as we get closer to whatever training cycle we're getting into, like mm-hmm. the beginning of your 16-week marathon build,
yep.
you're going to want to start to dial that back a little bit and go to stretches that are focused more on flexibility, or good classes that are focused more on flexibility and stretching. These could be called gentle or yin, or have some description in the class description of spending a lot of time on the mat, on the floor.
Okay.
And then as you get closer still to your peak event, like in the start of the taper,
mm-hmm.
you really want to dial back the intensity even more, and that's where a super gentle class is good. Meditation classes are really wonderful at any time during the training cycle, but especially as you're starting to tune up your mental focus for the race. So, you know, we have kind of this, let's see, I got the X, this inverse proportion. So when your running is not too intense, then you can let the intensity of yoga be high. But
okay.
as your volume is coming up, you want to pull back on the intensity of the yoga so that there's balance.
Right.
Yoga can be a fantastic tool for balance for the runner if it's applied right.
Right.
If you're just putting heat and a lot of power yoga and, you know, 4 or 5 sessions a week on top of running 50 mm-hmm. or 60 miles a week, something's going to give.
Right. That's a lot of work. Definitely. You mentioned that there, you know, like different studios have different styles in terms of, you know, how aggressive or things are going to be. Is there a way to tell, like, if I was an athlete trying to, you know, doing yoga for the first time, is there a way, is it something you can ask when you call? Is like, you know, Absolutely. What's the best way to phrase that kind of question?
Absolutely. I would call, and studio owners, I love it when I get calls like this. And studio managers love to help you find the right class for you. So call and say, you know, I'm an athlete in training. I'm running a lot, and I've got a marathon coming up in 4 months. I'm looking for a class that will help me stretch my hips or strengthen my lower legs or whatever your individual reason for it. And then the manager or the owner can probably talk you through a little bit better. But even just looking at the name of the studio, if it has the word power in it, it's going to be helping with power. If it has words like Kripalu, which is a nice kind of more gentle student-directed style of yoga, or Iyengar, it's going to be more about alignment and probably longer holds of poses. And if it's got hot or heat or warm anywhere, the title, you know that that's going to be a more challenging, rigorous practice.
Right. And on a personal level, I'm actually curious as to, with the hot and yogas and warm yogas and stuff, you know, what is the primary benefit? What is the difference that people are looking for there?
It is designed to create more of a challenge and to increase your flexibility.
Okay.
That said, I definitely have some reservations about the practice. If you live in Minnesota and you're not running any particularly difficult race or even long run until September or October, go for it. Go check it out. Try it.
Okay.
Are already living in a really warm climate and running a lot, and you've got a peak event in 2 months or 1 month, I would be a little bit more reticent to send you to hot yoga. And hot could be anything from like 85 degrees, which is warm, to 105 degrees or even more.
Wow.
Yeah. And for somebody who is deconditioned and looking for a kind of provocative, transformative experience, the heat can be amazing. Mm-hmm. It can be a revelation, you know, to get in the room and stare in the mirror and watch the sweat coming down and to be told, hold it, you can do it. And that's a great feeling. But as runners, we know that feeling ideally from our workouts.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are doing 3 hard workouts a week, you know, one is hills and one is tempo and one is a long run, or maybe even more, and then also you're doing some core training and you're adding hot yoga, that's a whole lot of stress on the body at once. And I think that we're getting enough of the provocative stress from our running.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting enough of the provocative stress from your running, then you need to run a little bit harder. Faster in your race. It depends, of course, what your goals are. The other idea behind the heat is to increase your flexibility, as I said, but it's kind of a false sense of flexibility. I mean, like, it loosens you up so much that it can be easy to overstretch, and you sure don't want that as a runner. There's a really common yoga injury where we stretch too far into the high hamstring attachment at the sitting bone.
Yeah.
So you get this kind of pain right at where the tendon matches, meets up with the sitting bone, and it's kind of a niggly feeling.
I've had it before, so I know. I think it's called high hamstring tendinopathy.
Yeah, it's a common running injury, and drastic pace changes can overstress that tendon, but it's really easy to overstretch it in forward bends, and especially in the heat. And it takes a long time to heal, as you probably found out.
Oh, yes.
Unfortunately, ironically perhaps, like something that you could just stretch out if you just went a little bit farther, that you're going to get a release. But in fact, the problem is that you've already overdone it. So I worry about injuries like that in the heat. As long as we're maintaining this inverse proportion, I think that hot and warm yoga has its place.
No, I mean, I think that's awesome. And I appreciate your honesty about, you know, where it fits in the training and where it may not work. Because I do actually hear so many athletes say they do the hot yoga, and you know, from my perspective, I didn't realize just how hard it was, but it makes total sense. It's like training in the heat. It's going to be X times harder. So you really need to figure out where it fits in the overall scope of your training.
Exactly. And we have to think about the big picture, like you say, and about goals. And you know why people like the hot yoga? It's because it's intense and intensity. And it's
right.
Like, look, another way to kind of get into that same headspace that you can get into toward the end of your 40 minutes of tempo or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, if we keep piling stress on the body without balancing it with rest, then something is going to break down.
Right, right. No, it makes total sense. And kind of keeping going with the theme of integrating it in with your training, do you suggest somebody do yoga after their easy days or follow a harder, like the hard days hard principle where you have a hard workout, so go and do your yoga because that's another stress?
Right. It totally depends on the athlete and how long they have been practicing and exactly what kind of yoga they're working on. So there are myriad factors that could adjust that. But in general, I'd rather make the hard days hard and the easy days easy. So if you had a hard workout, just a short but semi-rigorous yoga session after might be a better use of your time than spacing it so that every day has a kind of a medium hard effort in it, so that we get more of the peaks and valleys, because that's where our adaptation occurs, is having the downtime.
Right.
But if you're going to do restorative yoga, which I totally recommend to all of your podcast listeners, fantastic, then that could go any day. It's very, very relaxing. It could go on your off day. It could go on a hard day as a balance within the period of the day itself. So it depends how rigorous the yoga is.
Right. No, that makes sense. But I think it's good for athletes to know that, you know, they should keep their harder sessions on their workout days, and then on the easy days, use a restorative yoga. Talk a little bit about what the, you know, I guess restorative yoga in general. I know that it's, you're a huge fan of it. And so
yeah.
A little bit more about kind of what it is, what kind of poses and stuff are, what's the difference between that and other types?
Restorative yoga, you never stand up. You spend the whole 60, 75, 90 minutes, 2 hours if you're lucky, down on the ground, covered in blankets, lying on pillows with a sandbag on your eyes and soft music playing, maybe candlelight. The teacher will come and tuck your blanket in around you. It's fantastic. And the goal is restoration rather than building flexibility. So none of the poses should even feel that much like a stretch. There are some where you may be in a supported back bend and you'll feel a nice opening in your chest, which is nice for everybody who spends time in a chair and for runners.
Hunched over.
Yeah, for cyclists who have their hands on the handlebars. So I mean, there may be a light stretch in a pose like that, but the goal is to calm the nervous system rather than to create a specific physical change in the body other than relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good way to jumpstart your recovery, athletic recovery, and to find balance between the doing of workouts and the being of just relaxing on the mat.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. And I think it probably speaks to a larger connection between the mental connection between training hard and the physical part of it and the mental connection. It seems like it's really trying to fuse that, and so, you know, you're not getting too far with getting, you know, I've always had the problem, I know a lot of athletes I coach do, of they're just always thinking about their training and always thinking about their recovery, and it gets overwhelming. And so it sounds like this is a good way to just kind of relax and let things kind of go their own way, you know, a little bit for at least an hour or two.
Exactly. And it's there's something about going to the studio and having the minimal instruction, now lying on your pillow this way and let me tuck that blanket around you. Yeah, it can become easier to relax more deeply than you would if you were just sitting on the couch watching a ball game. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's really taking some time out. And I think in that way, it helps to balance the stress of training a little bit more. And there's a spiel that I usually give. The goal that we're looking for is to find balance, because all injuries, especially running injuries, are going to come from some kind of imbalance in the body. Like
mm-hmm.
you sprain your ankle because you lose your balance in space and you fall down. And yoga can help with that by strengthening your core and your lower leg and your sense of proprioception where you are in space. But then there's also, there needs to be a balance in the body itself, front to back, side to side, top to bottom. You know, if you're having some knee issues and maybe coming from the hip, you need to be balanced in the strength of the hip and the strength on down the leg into the lower leg. But then ultimately, overtraining or burnout issues, like mental injuries, come from that imbalance between work and rest, between always, as you say, thinking about your workouts and tracking your workouts online and looking up other people's times on AthLinks and whatever, you know, obsessive compulsive behavior that
right.
we might engage in. It's all about doing and adding more stress. And practices like restorative yoga help to balance that so that we can feel more balanced as people. And ultimately, your family is going to appreciate that too. You'll have longevity as an athlete if you don't burn out.
Right, right. No, that makes a lot of sense, definitely. We've talked a little bit about the different types of, you know, routines. How does your, you know, as an athlete and who obviously loves and appreciates yoga, what does your weekly or monthly routine look like with yoga? You know, are you going to different sessions every day in terms of the purpose? And I know you teach now, so it's obviously doing some other stuff, but talk a little bit about how things work in your training.
Sure. So, well, right now, for example, I'm just like kind of working my base up for a trail marathon and 50K in the spring. So I've got, I'm running 6 days. I've got 2 days that are really easy, one day that's long. And then often I work at the studio on the weekend teaching teacher training or taking workshops. So run long on Friday, do something really mellow at home on Friday. Saturday, go in after a shorter run and may spend the whole weekend in asana practice or modeling things. The teaching is a little bit different from practicing yourself. It's kind of more physically rigorous because you don't get warmed up in the same way, and sometimes you just have to bust something out to show to your students. I take Sunday off. I go a little longer, harder on Mondays and Wednesdays. And on those days, I do a Pilates class, actually, on Mondays and teach. On Tuesdays, I'll do a power yoga class, which is actually kind of like a double whammy after the Pilates, very core focused. So I get to take that. On Wednesdays, I will do something at home, sometimes with weights, definitely a focus on core stuff, and then just kind of feel my way around my hips and see how they're feeling. So that's like a home practice day. Mm-hmm. Thursdays, I teach and then I take a class, either a power class or another core focus class, and then we've come back to Friday. I started my week with the long run. My favorite. So it's a combination of things. You know, there are some days that are more stretch focused, like I would stretch after my long run, stretching over the course of the weekend, stretching on Wednesdays and Thursdays at home, and then also combining some core focus stuff and some power yoga.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, or you've talked a lot about, you know, flexibility on one hand and then power on the other and building strength. I think the common concept with most people when they think about yoga is it's all flexibility, it's all stretching. But you've talked and I understand that there's a power element to it and a strength building element to it. How does that actually work? And can you expound a little bit more on that concept of how yoga is producing power? And this question actually comes from one of our readers, Carlicia Campos, whose instructor is always telling her that it's not about the stretching, it's about the power. So,
right. Yeah, and I would say it's about the balance between the power and flexibility. And this is the one reference in the Yoga Sutra, which is the combination of kind of spiritual aphorisms, our seminal text in yoga. The only thing it says about the poses is that the poses ought to have a balance between strength and flexibility. So the whole physical practice is designed to find that balance between strength and flexibility so that we can sit on the floor of the cave and meditate, because that's how we actually get to enlightenment. It's not necessarily through the poses, although sometimes it can happen that way, but really it's getting ourselves comfortable sitting. So the power comes in core strength that will get the spine supported so you can sit. And then happily in a lot of the standing poses also hip strength, which is major for runners.
Absolutely.
Finding a balance between the strength in the glutes and the strength of the lower leg, the strength in the quads in the front and the hamstrings in the back, and kind of finding a happy medium between all of those. And in this way, yoga can be really good for injury prevention, although it's kind of tough to prove a negative that you have prevented an injury, but it can really help to ward off things like knee issues, plantar fasciitis, although the lower leg stuff, just by shoring up the core and the hips. Mm-hmm. So then there's also some leg strength stuff involved. It depends on the style of yoga. Because if you're going to a longer hold in an alignment class, that's going to be more isometric strength. You're just kind of going into a pose and holding it. But then other styles like power yoga are isotonic, and you're coming in and out of poses like lunges and squats over and over again. And happily again there, it's got really good benefit for runners.
Right, right. No, that makes a lot of sense. I appreciate you expanding on that a little bit because, like I said, I kind of knew that there was a power element involved, but, you know, obviously the name, but I didn't realize kind of exactly how. Along those lines, you know, something we didn't talk about and maybe we should have started with was, you know, talk a little bit about the history of yoga. You know, I know we see it as the spiritual practice in a sense. You know, what's the history and how have things evolved over the years?
It has evolved from being a kind of esoteric, almost secret practice for connection with God, connection with the universe, into a workout. Or mm-hmm. maybe it's devolved instead of evil. But that's a shift that's happened primarily starting in the 20th century with the introduction of a lot more physical poses. The traditional yoga texts describe only a very few poses, and almost every single one of those is a sitting pose. As I said, the idea of the poses themselves is to get us ready to sit in meditation. Mm-hmm. So those texts are basically just describing good ways to sit for meditation.
Okay.
But in the 20th century, there was this kind of mashup hybridization of gymnastics and calisthenics with a yoga practice. And there's some fascinating recent books about how this all tied into British colonialism and Indian nationalism. It's really cool history. But so there's this introduction of a lot of gymnastics and calisthenics to the spiritual practice. But if anybody goes to a good class, you'll instantly see, like, oh yeah, there is kind of the system for connection with the universe through the physical body. And we know that as runners.
Right.
We wouldn't be running if we didn't feel like there was something more to it than just running. You know, even just taking the time to be out in nature and look around, that is yoga. That mm-hmm. is connection right there. So the poses themselves, the physical routines are all pretty recent innovations in the system of yoga.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I like that you connected it to running because, right, running, we see it as such a physical thing, but anybody that's run for a long time knows that it can be very spiritual, even if you're not a spiritual person,
yeah.
you know. No, that's cool. I've never put that connection together, so I hope, I appreciate it. So I got my nugget of wisdom today.
Awesome.
So moving on to, like, more specific workouts, for athletes who aren't, you know, are pretty busy and don't have a lot of time, you know, what kind of routines would you recommend, you know, if they only have 5 or 10 minutes after a run? What kind of poses and routines would you recommend that they work into and are most effective?
A nice way to alternate it would be to do a strength-focused practice. As you were saying, like, keep the hard with the hard, a strength-focused mm-hmm. practice on your hard days and a flexibility-focused practice on your easy days. Or you could alternate if you found that the opposite actually worked better for you. So for a strength practice, some squats and lunges like we see in sun salutations are okay. really good. And you can learn sun salutations online or from any good teacher around. It helps to learn them from somebody in person so that she or he can tweak your alignment and make mm-hmm. sure that you're keeping yourself safe. But that's 5-10 minutes right there. It really okay. helps strength. And you can highlight certain poses in the sun salutations for strength, namely the plank position, which is just top of a push-up, moving down to the kind of halfway down push-up,
mm-hmm.
And then chair pose, which is like a standing squat.
Yeah.
So that would be a strength practice. And then a flexibility practice is to make your way around your hips. Make sure that you get something to stretch the front of the hips, the hip flexors, the outer hips, your glutes and IT band, the back of the hips, your hamstrings, and then something for your inner thighs as well. And this could be a series of lunges. This could be a series of seated forward folds, stuff that you do on your back. And the possibilities are endless, of course, for what you could do for your flexibility. Also, a little bit for the lower legs is nice,
okay.
like a squat or kneeling or half squat, half kneeling, which mm-hmm. are all really nice. And since we are in my office and I've got my books here.
Perfect. Hey, yes, please do. Please do.
This is my book, The Athlete's Pocket Guide to Yoga.
Okay.
which is exactly as you say, like, oh, what if I had 10 or 15 minutes after my run? What would I like to do? And this will take you through, like, here are some lunges that you might like to do after your run. And
perfect.
It's just a reference. It's spiral bound, so it can lie flat on the mat, and folks can take a look at that. And be inspired to practice these routines and then maybe develop their own routines based on their individual needs.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. And for those who are listening on the podcast and aren't watching the video, we're going to throw up a link on our site to Sage's book and the one that she mentioned, The Pocket Guide to Yoga, and then The Runner's Guide to Yoga as well. And if you want to visit it, it's runnersconnect.net /RC14, or you can visit Sage's website, which I believe is, why don't you say it in case I get it wrong?
It's sageroundtree.com.
Okay, I thought so. And
technically, there's no D in Roundtree, but if you add a D, it'll kick you over there, too.
Okay, you pick both names smartly.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick them, which I should have said at the beginning. I know it sounds like I picked them, but my parents picked Sage, and my husband's family way back in the day must have picked Roundtree. So it works out very nicely as a yoga name, but I know folks think that I made it up. I didn't.
It's very funny, and actually missing the D is something that I actually didn't realize until I reread your book. And I was like, wait, there's no D in there. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize. I'm sure you get it all the time, so.
It's tricky. It's like Thompson without a P. No, it's from Rowan Tree. Rowan is a kind of holly bush. So in England, they still spell it with a W or a W-N.
Very neat. Oh, cool. See, now we learned a little bit of another thing today. So, again, we talked a little bit about your books. Talk a little bit about your practice in North Carolina and you know, kind of how that works.
Sure. I have a pair of studios in central North Carolina. I live in Carrboro, which is Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So we have a studio called the Carrboro Yoga Company and a studio in Durham, just up the road, the Durham Yoga Company. I teach yoga for athletes there. I teach online as well because we record some of my classes at Carrboro Yoga and those stream at yogavibes.com. And they're pretty runner-specific classes. In fact, they drill down to the point where it's like, this is a practice to help with your hip flexors, or this is a practice to help with your shoulders or your lower legs. So that's a nice resource, I think, for folks. I work with some of the teams at Carolina, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Tar Heels. And I do some writing as well. Got the books that we've been talking about, but then also my writing for Runner's World, and I write a blog for Yoga Journal, which is kind of the flip side. Instead of targeting the runners specifically, this is kind of on the other end of the spectrum.
Right, right. No, that's very cool. And I think having the streaming video is pretty cool. You know, people can follow you along, hopefully, and get some benefit out of it.
It's great. And then I have a small set of athletes that I coach.
Okay.
In ultra running and mountain biking.
Oh, very neat. So talk a little bit about your favorite, I guess you could call it series of poses or routines. You know, what's your kind of favorite to go through?
It depends on what I'm looking to do, but people ask me this a lot. Like, what are the top 10 poses? What are the top 3 poses? What's the number one pose? The number one pose, you can count them down from one on, is legs up the wall, which is lying down on your back with your legs up the wall.
Okay.
And if you have a wall or your hamstrings are so tight that you can't actually lie on your back with your hips flexed to 90 degrees, you can put your calves onto the top of the coffee table or the sofa cushion, and then you've got this kind of 90 degrees at the back of the knees, 90 degrees at the front of the hips. Mm-hmm. And it's great for restoration and recovery and for draining some of the fluid that accumulates in your legs, either because of a long run or a day on your feet or travel.
Right.
So that is number one. And if you spread your arms off to the sides while you're doing it, you're also getting a chest stretch.
Ah.
So that's the best. It can get your hamstrings stretched, it can get your chest stretched, but mostly it gives you an opportunity to slow down.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. We used to do that all the time in college and high school between races because you'd race twice sometimes in the same day. Who knew all this all along I was doing yoga?
That's great. So that's a number one. Another one that's very useful for athletes and everyone is downward facing dog, which is the upside down V where you've got your hands and your feet on the floor and your hips up in the air because it stretches pretty much the whole back line of your body. So the back of your back, the back of your hips, the back of your legs, including all the way down into the calves and Achilles, which can be tough to get into. So that's a nice one as well. Also, it's an inversion. You've got your head down under your heart, which is interesting for your brain, too. perceptual challenge, a different orientation in space.
Right. So
that's a good one. Back onto the floor, I like lunges for athletes. I saw on Twitter somebody had said, how do I get into my hip flexors and my hamstrings if I have just a few minutes?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is you come to a lunge.
Okay.
A lunge floor, back knee down, front knee just over the front ankle, and hold there for a little while. If you lean your chest forward, you're getting into your hamstrings. If you lift your chest up, and maybe even tuck your tailbone under a little, you're getting into your hip flexors. Or you could shift kind of forward and back from the lunge, forward to like runner's lunge where you're getting into a hamstring stretch. And that's a really nice pair. We need flexibility through that range of motion because that's our stride right there. So we need to be able to lift our knees high enough, and we need to be able to let our leg come out behind us some. So that's a good one too. And there's a lot of stuff you can do just from that simple lunge position to work around your hips.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you put your left knee forward, your right hand could be down on the floor and your left hand could come to your left knee and you could twist. And that helps get you deeper into the outer left hip as well as giving a twist to your spine. So right. That's a good one too.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's top three.
No, that's great. I mean, I'm sure, like I said, you probably get that question all the time. So I'm glad you have it all ready to go. You're like, here we go.
Oh, my dude, but those are the three today.
No, that's cool. And a question I didn't ask you in the pre-interview, you know, one of the things that I'm curious about now after listening to this a little bit is, you know, what's your take on what we call dynamic flexibility with active stretching and kind of that theory where holding poses and holding stretches for a long period of time is actually not good for the muscles?
The idea is that it is diminishing the contractile strength for a little while.
Correct.
Yeah, so if you're a high jumper, then that would make a lot of sense. If you're going out to run 90 minutes, it probably doesn't make an ounce of difference.
Okay.
That said, yeah, sure, let's do dynamic before and static after, and it works out really nicely. As we said, some schools of yoga or styles of yoga are really dynamic anyway. Mm-hmm. Like moving through sun salutations is dynamic.
Okay.
And then holding each of the constituent poses of the sun salutations would be static if you stayed in them for 5 breaths, 10 breaths, 15 breaths. But moving in and out with the breath is in and of itself a dynamic warm-up, which is nice.
Right, right. No, that makes total sense. And I didn't mean to just throw it out there, but I kind of figured that you'd had it before.
That's great. And yeah, sure. Let's since that's what the research is saying right now, sure, let's do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Before, static after.
Right.
I just don't think unless you're truly like a sprinter, like a 100-meter kind of guy, that mm-hmm. it's going to actually diminish your speed. Because running is not in that sense a power sport, except at the very, very short distances.
Right, right. No, it makes total sense. And along those lines, you know, you mentioned holding for 5, 10, 15 breaths. You know, it probably depends on what the purpose is, but is there a general idea of how long you want to hold a pose?
Yes, and it depends on what your intention is for the pose. But getting the muscles to release in the hopes of increasing your flexibility, a hold of somewhere between 5 and 15 breaths is probably enough.
Okay.
Would take you, if you're breathing medium slow, like between 30 and 90 seconds. After about 90 seconds, the muscle has done what it's going to do. If you want to target the fascia system, which is the connective tissue
mm-hmm.
That wraps around and shoots through the muscles, then a longer hold may be in order. There's a style of yoga called yin yoga that goes for long holds of poses. And by long, I mean like 2 minutes, 4 minutes, 6 minutes in a deep lunge on the
floor.
And that, just like hot yoga, is a mental endurance experience and therefore very appealing, I think, to runners.
Right, right. No, that makes sense. But yeah, that's good to know, I guess, kind of the basic of, you know, most of the routine, unless you're doing something specialized, would be in that range. No, that's great to know. Well, Sage, that's all the questions I had today. And again, if we're going to throw up the links to your books, as well as your practice and the video so people can follow you along. Again, thank you so much for taking the time today to meet with us, and I feel like I learned so much, and I know probably our listeners as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. It was great to talk to you.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Sage. I'll cut the interview off there. So that was awesome. I hope I mentioned everything that kind of.
That's wonderful.
Okay, great. So this is going to go up. December 19th, so next Wednesday. And I'll shoot you an email sometime early next week when everything's formatted, when I get the video up and all of the posts written and everything like that, so you can just make sure everything looks good. And we'll throw up the links to your books and your site and stuff like that. And hopefully it drives a lot of traffic and just exposes you to even more people. So
great. Wonderful.
Awesome.
Thanks
well, thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank
Have
you.
A great day.
You too. And we'll talk soon.